98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Let's tell you about the top stories of the day. We do it at 4 o'clock every day here on the Burns and Gambo show. We call it the 4 o'clock reset, and we start today's reset with the Coyotes. Big win over the Nashville Predators today in that best-of-five qualifying round. 4-1, they get the win. They're up 2-1 in this best-of-five. Connor Garland had the go-ahead goal in this one, and he talked about it afterwards.
It was such a good play by Stepp, obviously. He's got a couple guys draped on him, and, you know, he just buys time for me there. And, you know, just try to, you know, put some on net. I had, you know, a lot of shots, and they all got blocked. So good to get one through there, and, you know, just fell back in the net.
Taylor Hall added a power play goal. That was just their second, I believe, in 11 tries so far this series. And Carl Soderberg added an unassisted goal. Darcy Kuemper, 39 saves.
Yeah, Kuemper was great after playing yesterday. Antti Raanta was not available, so Aiden Hill was the backup. But all of those, that was all third period. Everything you just mentioned there was third period. That was a, Yotes took a 1-0 lead, and then Nashville came back to tie at 1-1. And in the third period, you know, when things got tight, that's when Garland scored. And I thought the power play goal by Hall with about five minutes left, I think that really sealed it. Then they added the other one. So now they're up 2-1. They'll play again on Friday. And if they can win that one, then they would advance to the playoffs.
Diamondbacks and the Astros again tonight. Robbie Ray, Lance McCullers, the matchup from Chase Field. Zach Greinke has been bumped from his start tomorrow. He will not pitch against the Diamondbacks tomorrow as he was originally scheduled. Meanwhile, Torrey Lovello pregame today. Did he consider giving younger guys starts today after pulling some of his veteran guys last night in the sixth inning of that game? Here's what Torrey said.
Yeah, I mean, I get Dalton. I was excited for Dalton. He got a start yesterday. And, you know, I tried to tell you guys yesterday, he didn't need to go 5-for-4 to get back in the lineup today. I just felt like I'm gonna go with certain matchups at certain times, and I want to play the younger players. I believe in that. I think they're important to this team, and we're only as strong as our 30th and getting ready to be our 28th player. So I think playing an entire roster and giving them the time and giving them at-bats is extremely important. And super excited for Andy Young. He looked exceptional last night at the plate, and I know he's super excited about that. And we're going to give him some opportunities as well. And you know, when and where that happens, I can't quite predict. But I've liked what I've seen out of the younger players coming up here.
Steven Vogt is the catcher tonight. John Jay is the designated hitter tonight for the Diamondbacks. Other than that, it looks relatively
well. They're not getting anything out of designated hitter, right? They're just not getting anything out of it. You know, whether it's Peralta, Lamb, Crone, they'll give John Jay an opportunity, veteran player. They just need somebody to get on base. It's been, you know, I worried a little bit about the DH. Now, Carson Kelly hasn't been hitting a catcher, but Vogt's not hitting either. But you got to get the veteran a day in there, and he'll handle Robbie Ray. I think he handled them the last time, too. So John Jay at DH. Got to see if you can get something out of that position.
Cardinals have added a few players to their roster, signing safety Kentrell Bryce, wide receiver Andre Patton. They also reportedly have signed offensive lineman Coda Martin after he was waived by the L.A. Chargers. Depth guys with camp upcoming to be sure,
yep.
But trying to fill out that roster a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a chance for the offensive lineman to be a practice squad guy. The Coda Martin, probably a practice squad option. And then a safety, they only had 5 safeties, and you want to make sure you have depth going into camp in case guys go down. So adding a sixth safety seemed very important to them.
The Big Ten Conference announced their schedule today. As of right now, it will start on Labor Day weekend. It has 4 different weekends built into it that they could reschedule games into if they had to. Each team has 2 bye weeks, and then there's 2 extra weeks at the end of the season where they could move games if they need to. And that's the kind of flexibility that caught Adam Rittenberg's attention. He's a college football writer for ESPN.
The key here with a lot of these schedules that they need most with the Big Ten of any other is the flexibility component. And, you know, they have 41 of their 70 games that can be moved to another week, which we know is likely if the season is even attempted, that there are going to be some stoppages and some postponements and rescheduling of games. And so, you know, I had heard initially that they were going to front load their schedule with division games. And, you know, in talking to one of the assistant commissioners today, they were going to do that. But it just became apparent the best way to do this was to build in as many open weeks as possible.
And now we see if they can pull it off.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be able to. It's definitely a cause for concern. your flexibility is great, but when you've got 14 guys go down with the coronavirus and, you know, you can't have them play in a two-week period, man, you can't have it happen again. It's almost like you're giving yourself, we could have one bad week, you know, where we're out 10, 12 players, but you can't have that week, and then you come back a week later, and 10 guys, and you know, so there are issues going on. Northwestern, Rutgers. Rutgers' whole team is quarantined right now.
UCLA just announced today eight
players.
Positive tests.
Yeah, if that doesn't stop, it's going to be hard for these teams to play all their games.
But our top story of the day today continues to be this sudden infatuation we have with the Phoenix Suns and how they've captured our attention and imagination and the league's attention and imagination by going 3-0 in the bubble. There are only three teams that have yet to lose a game in the bubble so far. The Raptors, the Pacers, and the Suns. The Suns and the Pacers will play tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But, oh, go ahead. You were going to say something?
Yeah, and Indiana is playing for something because they'd like to, you know, right now they're the 5 seed. Miami's the 4 seed. They're one game behind Miami, but they're also only one game ahead of Philly. So, you know, if they're playing for positioning, you know, it matters because, again, there are two teams within one game of them on each side of the win and the loss column.
Yeah. The Suns continue to get help. That is our top story of the day today. And the help that they're getting today came from the Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets. The Jazz beat the Memphis Grizzlies 124-115.
Memphis is 0-4 in the bubble.
Yep.
0-4.
The Spurs lost to the Nuggets 132-126.
They are 2-2 in the bubble. They've lost their last two games.
Okay. So as it stands right now, today, the very latest, and there are no more games tonight that impact this at all. That was it for today. The Memphis Grizzlies are currently the 8th seed right now. They have a one-game lead over the Portland Trail Blazers in that race. The Spurs and the Pelicans are both two games back of the Grizzlies. The Suns are 2.5 games back of the Grizzlies. So consider this, all right? Memphis is the 8th seed. Portland's only a game back from them. San Antonio, New Orleans are only two back from Memphis at this point. Everything is so clustered in very tightly with the way here's my big takeaway from today.
Okay.
I'm looking at Memphis's schedule. And I'm trying to figure out if they're
going to get a win.
Their schedule is brutal. Now, I know a lot of the teams they're going to play
are going to stop playing.
Are not going to have as much to play for.
Your last two games.
Boston and Milwaukee, right? I agree that those opponents might not have anything to play for. But it might very well be. We're talking about chasing, Memphis and Portland right now? This conversation could quickly turn into the Suns chasing Portland and New Orleans, and Memphis isn't even in the picture when it's all said and done. Their lead is one game over Portland.
Right.
That's it.
Could be gone in a New York minute.
Yep.
It could be gone. The 8 through 13 seeds, take the Suns out of it. Memphis, Portland, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Sacramento are a combined 5-12. They're not playing well.
Yeah.
The Suns are 3-0. The only team with a winning record is Portland. They're 2-1. Sacramento's 0-3. New Orleans is 1-2. Spurs are 2-2. Portland's 2-1, and Memphis is 0-4. So things have happened that give the Suns hope. The most important thing is that they won. They had to win their games. They've won 3 in a row. Big game tomorrow against Indiana. You win that one, and you'll probably tie either New Orleans. You'll tie San Antonio. You know, because they don't play tomorrow, so you would tie them because you're a half game back of
yep.
San Antonio. So you would tie San Antonio.
You're a half game back of San Antonio.
Yep, and
a half game back of New Orleans. That's it. You're a half game back of being the team that is going to be on Portland's heels.
Well, you got to pass those two, but then also you got to get within four games, and then you have to pass one more. Whether that's the Grizzlies or the Trailblazers, it doesn't matter. But you're going to have to pass New Orleans, San Antonio, and one of the two, Memphis or Portland.
But the margin is getting very narrow with all of those teams. And for what it's worth, tomorrow's big games, the Pelicans play the Kings, the Trailblazers play the Nuggets. Those are two games to keep an eye on tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think you root for the Kings over the Pelicans.
Oh yes, yes.
Even though the
yes.
Kings are only a half game behind Phoenix.
Absolutely. I do. When we come back, after making wholesale changes during the sixth inning last night, Torrey Lovello said the move was not intended to send a message to anybody. But if things continue the way they have for the D-backs, when is the time for Lovello to send a message to his players? We'll talk about that coming up. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Last night in Mass, Starling Marte, Eduardo Escobar, Christian Walker, Cole Calhoun, Ketel Marte, all gone.
Hit the pine!
Gone. Corey took everybody out.
And it was that, I took a screenshot of it and I put it up on Twitter. I'm like, wow, you never see that.
No, you don't.
You never see, like, obviously there's frustration there, right? Now, we could determine what was Torrey's trying to send a message. Mm-hmm. Was he just frustrated with the, no, you got a rookie pitcher on the mound. He's a kid's a rookie. You can't get any hits off of him. You know, you're making him look like Cy Young out there.
Right.
I think it was just like, you know, and it was early enough in the game where you think there's still time to come back, but he was just like, you know what?
It was 8-1, though.
You guys come out, and you guys go in. It's almost like taking the first unit out in basketball and putting in your backups.
Right.
The second unit. You guys see what you could do.
If an NBA coach were to take out all five of his starters at once and put in all five backup players at once.
Now, I've seen that.
You're going to tell me that's not a message that you're sending to those five guys?
Yeah.
You're going to and that's why, look, I've got a lot of respect for Torrey. He comes on with us every week. He does the show. They've done amazing things under Torrey Lovello. They haven't. Think about Torrey Lovello's time as manager of the Diamondbacks. They have very rarely been this bad or spent this many days under 500. Yeah. Think about it. He's
a good manager. There are people that want him fired. I'm like, okay, like he's not getting fired.
What, over 11 games?
Right. Yeah. He's not getting fired. He's been a good manager.
But
his team's just not playing well.
When Torrey said this last night, I'm just not sure that I bought it. I'm going to be honest with you.
No. I don't send messages like that. I'll send messages directly face-to-face with guys and have those conversations. I just wanted to get some of our guys have been going every day. A little bit more rest, get them off of their feet. So definitely wasn't the intent to send any type of message. I just wanted to maybe live to fight another day, let them watch some baseball, let the understudies get some at-bats, meaningful at-bats. A couple of them are going to be playing tomorrow, and I just didn't want guys to get stale. So that was my way of accomplishing two things, getting the right guys the rest and getting the understudies a couple at-bats, get their at-bats tuned up.
Boy, it sure felt like a message watching that game last night.
Well, it's up to those guys to interpret what they felt. You know, if you're a player, do you feel like you were coming out to get rest? You had an off day the day before. You had an off day.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you feel like you were coming out because you're not producing? I don't think Torrey needs to go tell the guys you're not producing. What you do is you work with the leaders of the team, and you got to get the most out of your leaders. And your leaders are the guys like David Peralta, who's been here, and Nick Ahmed, who's won a Gold Glove and just got a new contract, and Eduardo Escobar. Like your best players, those guys need to be your leaders aren't Christian Walker and Starling Marte and Ketel Marte. It's the other guys that I mentioned, and you've got to push those guys to play better baseball.
Yeah, Torrey today was asked, okay, if you weren't trying to send a message last night, when is it time to send a message to your guys? Here's what he said today.
As far as, you know, benching guys or doing something that's completely outside of the norm, I'm not quite to that point. I don't think it's going to serve its purpose right now. I'm not totally against it. I just feel like the messages that I need to be sent are done, you know, privately inside of our living room, inside of our space, the way it should be done.
Yeah, so
who are you benching? You want to bench David Peralta? You want to bench Eduardo Escobar? Who do you want to bench? You want to bench Carson Kelly?
Well,
your future at catcher and play a 35-year-old guy?
He's that 35-year-old guy's playing tonight.
I think because did he catch Robbie Ray the last time?
I think you might have. You're probably right.
Like, you could bench Jake Lamb.
Well, he's already basically been benched.
Right, but I'm saying, like, part of this is, let's be somewhat realistic here. Can you bench Peralta, Escobar, and Ahmed?
Sure, and you're making a good point.
in that, one, you don't have a ton of options anyway coming off your bench. And number two, we're talking about 11 games, and we would never talk about benching Eduardo Escobar after 11 games during a 162-game season.
No.
We would never be talking about benching David Peralta after 11 games in a 162-game season.
Eight guys are ice cold right now.
Yes.
Eight guys. Cold as ice. Was that Farner? Cold as ice.
And you're willing to sacrifice our love, yes.
Well, let's see if they're willing to sacrifice, because they've got, listen, it's very rarely where you see a team have that many players that are so cold at the same time. That's rare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you look at the Astros. They had a couple guys that weren't going very good, but then you got Brantley hitting .415. And so, you know, but every team's got a couple of guys that aren't going. The Yankees, Gary Sanchez is batting like .088.
Sure.
Like, everybody's got one or two. The Diamondbacks have eight guys that aren't hitting right now.
No, and I'm not sitting here advocating mass benching. I'm not sitting here advocating that the lineup that you finished last night's game with should be the one you start with. That is a drastic move. But I am going to continue to believe, just as there was a message in pinch hitting for David Peralta the other day, just as there was a message giving Nick Ahmed the day off, there was some kind of a message to those guys who were taken off the field last night all at once. Not slowly, an inning at a time, but everybody all at once. Torrey is doing things that it's very un-Torrey-like. Pinch hitting for Peralta, giving Nick a day off the way he did, especially after only 10 games, 8 games, whatever it was. Taking five of his core guys and pulling them all off the field at the same time.
He's trying to push the right buttons.
He is. Yeah. He understands that the nature of this short season, and he's trying to do something about it. And I'm going to go back to the words of Mike Hazen, who was asked this morning if he supports Lovello benching players, and I think his answer sums it up the best.
I don't think it was a benching. I think it was, we're down 8-1, and, you know, we are in the midst of a 60-game season that we are playing guys pretty regularly, and I think he genuinely wanted to get guys off their feet. You know, if the manager is sending messages in various subtle ways, I don't have a problem with it. I think, look, if we weren't expected to win, or to Doug's question earlier, if the expectation going into the season were different, then yeah, I might have a different take. We might have different conversations around, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. That's not what our expectation was.
If the manager wants to send a subtle message to his team, who am I to tell him he shouldn't?
What's the definition of subtle? I don't think that would come under subtle, benching five guys in the middle of a baseball game. Like, that to me, that's not subtle.
Well,
that's
okay.
Subtle is a common, let me see, definition of subtle. Merriam-Webster. Remaining after the, forget it. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure out.
Subtle is
subtle. Okay, that's not a subtle move.
Okay,
that's not a subtle move.
But doesn't it become a subtle move when you explain yourself afterwards by saying, "Oh no, there was no message there. I just wanted to give everybody some rest." It becomes not.
They had a day off the day before.
It becomes not subtle when during the postgame press conference, Torrey says, "Yeah, I benched their butts. I'm pissed. I'm mad. I'm furious at how we're playing."
That.
I know, but
he can't show that.
That's when it becomes not subtle,
because he can't show weakness. He's the leader. He has to show strength.
But those players know what's what.
Sure.
But
he's not going to tell that to the public.
No, I know. But that's when the move becomes not subtle, is when the manager comes out and goes Lou Piniella and said, "Yeah, I benched him. I'm pissed."
Anybody watching that game think that was a subtle move? Sixth, they're showing defensive line. You're like, who's playing?
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, when it was announced that the Suns would be a part of the NBA's Orlando bubble, our next guest said,
"I ran 500 simulations of that, and Phoenix made the play-in game one time."
Well, run them again, Kevin Pelton.
Double.
Because you're coming on next to tell us what your simulations say now.
I tweeted them last night.
That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
Don't stop.
I want to dedicate this song to our good friend Kevin Pelton up there in the Pacific Northwest. Don't stop believing, Kevin. Don't stop. You keep on dreaming. You keep on running those simulations.
Yeah, keep on simulating.
Keep on simulating and don't stop believing. Our NBA insider, Kevin Pelton, once upon a time when the bubble was first announced to us that he had ran 500 simulations of the bubble, and only one time did the Phoenix Suns actually make the postseason in the play-in tournament? Have you run your simulations again there, Kevo?
They're up to a solid 30.
30 out of 500?
30 out of 1,000.
30 out of 1,000. 2%?
Yeah. 3%.
3%?
Yeah.
Wait a second. I thought last night it was 2%.
You know, it was a smaller run. So with the bigger 1,000.
I actually tweeted Kevin last night because he doubled. I think I saw last night somebody said it doubled from 1% to 2%. I'm like, 2%? It's better. You doubled their chances.
Yeah.
And now it is up to 3%. Now, does that take into account anything that's happened today, like the Spurs losing?
No, that was this morning before the Spurs played.
Okay. Might be up to 3.5% now, Kevin.
It could be pushing.
Spurs lost. Who else lost?
Memphis lost.
Memphis
today, yeah.
Memphis and the Spurs. Kevin, we might be up to 4% right now. Kevin, we love you. We know you're a good sport, which is why we've had you on for years and years and years to talk NBA with us, and we're just giving you a hard time in the name of good radio. But it certainly has been. And you wrote a piece this morning on ESPN.com, and I'm glad to hear you and Gambo were tweeting at each other last night because I was thinking of you. With every single game and every single result and how it helps the Phoenix Suns, I was wondering how different the numbers look now. In your piece on ESPN.com, you very clearly give the Suns a lot of credit for how they've been able to play. You just kind of point out the obvious. They still have a lot of teams to jump in all of this, though.
Right. I mean, that was the biggest challenge for them coming into it, is not necessarily the number of games back they were, because that wasn't that significant. It was, again, the number of teams. So, you know, they've taken Sacramento out of the mix pretty comfortably. They beat them head to head, right? But the way the Kings have struggled so far, but you've still got, even with the Grizzlies going winless thus far, you've still got Portland, you've still got New Orleans, you've still maybe got San Antonio. So that's the biggest uphill battle for the Suns in all of this.
Yeah, I said that I wasn't going to get excited about the Suns unless they could reel off 3 in a row. Not thinking that they could do it because they were going to play the Clippers and the Mavs. And, you know, early on, you know, teams are going to play hard. Now, I think later in the final, with 2 games left, there may be some teams that can't move positioning, and they, you know, teams will catch a break because you're playing somebody that doesn't care. But they got the 3-0 with a remarkable win against the Clippers yesterday, one of the most meaningful basketball games the Suns have played in about 6 years. And by getting there, I mean, I think more importantly than the simulations and whether they make the playoffs or not, for a lot of us here in Phoenix, it's nice to see the Suns play games that matter.
For sure. I mean, that makes sense. And I think it's also a good bridge to next season for them, even if it doesn't end up resulting in a trip to the play-in matchup. You know, we had the report yesterday from The Athletic that it sounds unlikely that we're going to see a second bubble, quote-unquote, for the 8 teams who weren't invited, and possibly even not even, you know, individual workouts, full-team workouts in those teams' respective cities. So as compared to that, you know, for the Suns to be getting first this couple weeks of training camp, now these, you know, 3 scrimmage games, now these 8 games against real competition with this group together, I think is going to be a huge springboard to next season.
Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA insider, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. Kevin, as we mentioned earlier, when the bubble format was first announced, ran 500 simulations. He had the Suns making the play-in game 1 out of the 500 times. Now he's got them all the way up to 3%, which is remarkable given how long their odds were. I want to talk to you, though, about the Memphis Grizzlies, who lost again today. And help me out with this one. I'm starting to think in my mind now that for the Suns to get in, it's not Portland and Memphis that you're chasing anymore, but it's going to end up being Portland and New Orleans that you're trying to get in when you talk about 8 and 9 in the Western Conference. Do the numbers back that up in terms of Memphis and how they're falling apart right now?
So like I said, I haven't run it since their loss today, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think some of the concerns you had about the Grizzlies coming in have come to light here, and it hasn't helped that they've had bad luck in terms of injuries. First, Justice Winslow going down when they were practicing ahead of the scrimmages, and then now Jaren Jackson Jr. being ruled out for the rest of the season with the meniscus tear. But, you know, this is a young team that wasn't expected to compete coming into the season. It wasn't really built for that. And some of those flaws, I think, are coming to the fore now that they're being tested against this better competition on a night-in, night-out basis.
Kevin, one of the big stories here, obviously, is, you know, the heroics of Devin Booker yesterday, the incredible shot with Kawhi and then Paul George draped all over him, the game winner. Give me your thoughts on him, his progress, and his maturity so far this year.
I think it's everything you would have wanted to see as someone who admittedly was probably on the more skeptical side about Devin Booker coming into this season in terms of his ability, number one, to become more efficient as an offensive player. He made a huge stride in that regard in the 18-19 season before this, but, you know, maintaining that and then building on it. And then number two, being able to do it at both ends of the court, because that was the biggest issue was, you know, that, you know, even though he was touted as a potentially strong defender coming into the league, that we hadn't seen that kind of consistent effort from him on a night-in, night-out basis. And, you know, give him credit for stepping up and also give Monty Williams credit for building this stronger defensive culture and system and holding him accountable at that end of the court because, you know, he's made strides. I think you have to say clearly heading into next season, he's probably at worst one of the 25 best players in the league. And, you know, that's the kind of player that the Suns have been searching for a long time.
Speaking of defense, I don't know that he gets the credit he deserves outside of here, but Mikal Bridges is quietly becoming one of the best defensive players in the entire NBA. Booker doesn't make that shot if not for an outstanding defensive play by Mikal Bridges, who also did a great job defensively, especially late on both Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. He's their best defensive player. It's not even close. Is he getting any play nationally? Do you think people recognize what he can do defensively?
I think they are. I mean, I was just listening to the Low Post with my colleagues, Zach Lowe and Kevin Arnovitz this morning that they recorded yesterday talking about how great Mikal Bridges is defensively and how he kind of sucks people into taking him in one-on-one where his length can make it difficult for them to finish over him. You know, I think he's still maybe a little bit away from all defensive recognition because you know, he does still have some room for improvement in terms of his strength in certain matchups one-on-one. But, you know, as a second-year player, he's way ahead of the curve defensively.
Kevin Pelton from ESPN, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. When play starts to wind down in the bubble, is it going to look like it typically looks like when it comes to the contenders resting guys, when it comes to contenders not going all out, knowing that there is nothing to be gained? I'm looking at these teams the Suns are competing with, and I'm trying to figure out who's got what to play for and how hard they'll be playing when some of these matchups take place. What is your best guess on how hard some teams that don't have anything to play for will actually play this time a week from now?
Yeah, I guess I don't have a good feel for it because it's kind of surprised me how hard some of these teams have played thus far because I figured, you know, the slow ramp up, the three scrimmages, less than a typical preseason. Okay, these first couple of games, a team like the Lakers that's locked into their spot, basically, you know, they're probably not going to play their guys full minutes. And lo and behold, night one, there are the Lakers and the Clippers treating that pretty much like it was, you know, a regular season game with a lot on the line in terms of seeding. We have started to see, you know, a little bit of a pullback. Milwaukee rested some starters yesterday when they played against Brooklyn and then didn't play Giannis in the second half and the rest of the starters. So, you know, I think that's probably more we're going to get to. But it's interesting because, you know, it's not quite the same as playing these games at the end of an 82-game marathon regular season where you can sit guys out and know that they're going to be ready to go when playoffs start. In this case, I do think there's still a bit more of a need to make sure that guys are in rhythm, that they're prepared to play at the kind of, you know, intensity and the kind of minutes that they're going to play in the playoffs. So I think it's maybe that compromise where, you know, some players start, but they only play in the first half, that sort of thing, more like we see in the preseason than kind of the extreme they don't play at all that we often see in April during the regular season.
All right, simulation question. What time do you do these simulations at?
You know, I typically do them at the end of the night.
At the end of the – so, yeah, but could you do a random one at any time if you wanted to?
I can, although I'm running these in Excel, and I also use that to keep my scouting notes. So that's the reason I usually don't do it during games.
Okay, all right. So tomorrow we'll get an update on after all the games are played today. So tomorrow or later tonight we'll have an update on the chances.
Yeah, I'll be sure to tweet you when
yeah,
I
let me know. Okay. Hey, we're at 1%, then 2%. Now you just shocked me with 3%. I mean, let's say, hey, how high can we go?
I'm kind of with Gambo on this one. I kind of want to be tweeted too, Kevin. So I'm looking forward to hearing what your latest projections have when you run the simulations tonight. We love you, man. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
You got a Kevin Pelton from ESPN.
What does that look like when you run a simulation?
I think you just hit.
You just hit a button?
You just hit a button and it runs. I think it's that simple.
Can you videotape it and send it to us?
We'll ask him.
I've never run a simulation before.
The next time we have him on. When we come back, he's made three starts as a Diamondback. Madison Bumgarner's velocity has taken a drop. How concerned is Troy Lovello about that? How concerned should we be about it? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Live from the Auction Community Studios here at Gambo's house, let's send it back to the North Phoenix branch of the Auction Community Studios. Get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day from Sarah.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
A question we asked 2 days ago that we thought we should re-ask based off of what happened yesterday against the Clippers.
Yes, that is correct. So have your expectations changed for the Phoenix Suns regarding the rest of this season with the way that they have been playing that 3-0 start that you just mentioned? And the first three options are the same as our Monday poll, but I added a new fourth option. So the options to vote on. Yes, I do expect more now out of the Suns with the way they're playing. No, I already expected a good run from them. It's a hot start, but I think they're going to start losing some games. Or my expectations for this year have not changed at all, but now they have for next season.
Point.
There's a lot of them that could be the right answer.
There are a lot of them that could be the right answer. And I applaud Sarah for not putting in all the above option because my expectations have changed for this year. My expectations were 4-4. I now have higher expectations than 4-4.
It's not gonna be high hopes.
It's not gonna be that hard. They just need to win
two games,
two out of their remaining five games.
But have your expectations changed to where you think they're gonna make the playoffs?
No. But
okay, because I'm still not there yet either.
But that's not what the question. But that's not the answer that was available for me to choose from. My expectations have changed. They are now higher.
Okay, going into this, I probably would have bet a house payment that the Suns wouldn't make the playoffs.
Yeah,
I wouldn't make that bet now. I'll bet you lunch they don't make it.
Yeah,
that's because they won three in a row and everybody else is losing.
You went with
the last one. Yeah,
Sarah, what's our audience say?
42% say I do expect more now out of the Suns. My expectations have changed. 25% say no, I already expected a good run, so they are now on par with my expectations. 21% said my expectations for this year have not changed, but they have for next year. And then 12% said hot start for Phoenix right now, but they're going to start losing a lot of games.
Yeah, just by saying my expectations have changed for this year doesn't mean I think they're going to make the playoffs. That's just an honest way for me to answer the question. My expectations have changed for them this year. I think they're going to win more. I expect them to win more games than I had previously expected them to. Therefore, my expectations.
The next win they get is 30 on the season.
Yeah, I know. Mad Bub, we had higher expectations for Madison Bumgarner in his first year with the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's for sure. 0-2, ERA over 7. And
they've lost all three of the starts he's pitched in.
Yep. And to be fair to him, he pitched fine in the first two. You know,
last night he was bad.
Last night he was bad.
Yeah.
Hit three guys, giving up the long ball.
Big error.
The big error, throwing the ball away. And once again, here we are back to this velocity thing. And you pointed this out earlier. I'll bring it up here. Madison Bumgarner averaged 88.1 miles per hour on his four-seam fastball. That is the third lowest average four-seam velocity in a game in his entire career. The other two that were lower were his previous two starts with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So now the three lowest fastball velocities he's registered in his entire career.
Bang, bang, bang. Three
bang,
in a row.
Bang, bang. That's got to be a concern.
Yeah. I mean, for this year, I think that the restart really affected his preparation. I do. I think it's affected a lot of guys' preparation. I think he's one of those guys that's been affected by the restart. You start to pitch in spring training, they shut you down for a few months. And you start to pitch again, you don't have the normal amount of time because they're going to start the season, and they got to rush the start of the season. I think he was affected by that. I do. A veteran pitcher who's set in his ways and, has a routine. I believe that he has And I wanted to ask him this question last night in the post-game show, but I wasn't able to. I didn't get my hand raised in time on the Zoom meeting. But I do want to ask him if the preparation is just was affected by the restart, because I do think it was. Now, he's going to make a lot of money these next – he's on a contract for the next 4 years, and there are probably people that are concerned, oh, my God, what if we spend $85 million on this guy? What are we getting out of him? And, you know, the fact that he's not winning baseball games and his ERA is what – what's his ERA, over seven now? Over seven?
7.03, I think.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a concern. It's three starts. In a 60-game season, it's 25% of the season. But it's only three starts in what's probably going to end up being, you know, what, 3, 6, 9, 12 – you know, 130, 140 starts as a Diamondback if he plays it out.
Yeah.
This is only three starts of a possible 130, 140.
Here's some fresh sound from Torey Lovello today on why Mad Bum's velocity has dropped since the spring.
That's a good question. You know, maybe his body is used to a certain ramp up, and we cut right into that ramp up. I don't know. I wish I had the answer for that. So we know that the velo's there. You're right. We did see some ones, and I think a couple of twos. In the original spring training. So, you know, maybe it's a dead arm phase. I don't know. We've talked about a lot of different things, but it's just about putting the work in and believing in the process. And he's an easy bet to get back to where he knows he was, what, just however many months ago February was. So we know that that's in there.
And look, no one, at least no one on my half of the show, and I think you feel the same way, is saying that Madison Bumgarner is not the kind of pitcher who can pitch with diminished velocity. He's a crafty guy. He knows what he's doing up there. But to ask him to adjust on the fly when he's expecting himself to throw 4 miles per hour faster than he is, to expect him to deliver great results 3 games into diminished velocity, that's an awfully quick turnaround from throwing 4 miles per hour slower than what you're accustomed to throwing. He's not going to adjust to diminished velocity that quickly. I think he can learn how to pitch with diminished velocity, just not in three starts, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I've read stories about guys that have had lower velocity this year that have thrown a pitch, then looked up to see what the clock said. What did it say? You know, what did that say? What did I throw that at? Because there are some guys that are struggling with that this year. And I do think, you know, I'm not panicking on Madison Bumgarner. I mean, look, he's not as good as Zach Greinke, but they needed an ace. They needed a veteran to lead a young staff. Weaver's young. Gallen's young. Kelly is still kind of young, you know, even though he's got experience overseas. You know, Robbie Ray may be gone after this year, and then what, you're going to have Alex Young pitch. I mean, they needed a veteran to help with the staff. But you do also, for the money he's making, you expect him to win baseball games.
Yeah, Torey Lovello, quickly, any concern something isn't right physically with Mad Bum?
For me, no, zero concern. He's extremely honest, and nobody has ever said anything about this being a health issue whatsoever.
And I told you earlier, I'm not concerned what long-term this means for Madison Bumgarner. I'm not going to get worried three starts, he's got diminished velocity. That means that this is going to be a bad investment for the Arizona Diamondbacks, not after three starts. I am worried short-term of their ability to compete this year if Mad Bum is going to take this entire year and he's going to throw 4 miles per hour slower than what he's used to doing. I think that's a bad sign for this year if it's going to be like that all year long.
You can't go anywhere if you're not winning. If you're not winning games that he pitches in, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Everybody from LeBron James, Donovan Mitchell, they were all in awe of Devin Booker's buzzer beater yesterday against the Clips, and it's leading to something that Booker hasn't gotten much of since entering the NBA. Respect. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.